Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen, remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
Here you are. BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.
We're back. It's a distraction. I'm Drew. That's Roth. How you doing, Roth?
I'm good, man. How are things?
It is dry skin season in my household. I'm getting the chapped sides of my nostrils, and that excites me more than anything in the world.
Listeners behind the game here. We've been getting so many emails. People want to know, how's Drew's dermis? We need dermis chat, and we need it early in the pod.
There's that day in the winter, you never know when it's going to come, when suddenly I'm rushing to grab all the Aquaphor I can and just applying it on random dry spots on my fucking... decaying middle-aged body, like, hush, there goes my ass crack again. It's all chapped up.
We got a guest. Let's stop talking about
Oh, speaking of which, our guest this week is Simpsons executive producer and co-showrunner Matt Selman, who has been with the show since 1997.
Wow.
Holy underwear. Let's give Matt an eye caramba, shall we, Roth?
Hey, how's it going, man?
It's going great, guys. It's
Sorry
going really
to hear
great.
About Drew's ass crack. So
yes, that's
true.
It was a good.
No, I remember Philadelphia face. It was not. Are you guys in Philadelphia?
No, we're all basically along the same corridor, in New York. Drew's in Metro DC, but plenty of bad weather to go around.
Dan is in Philadelphia.
Our own Dan McQuaid is in Philadelphia. Dan McQuaid, who just had a child. Last night, him and his wife had their first kid, a little baby boy, who I believe is named after Corey Simon, but I cannot verify that right now.
Fletcher Cox McQuaid. Welcome.
That's right.
Corey Feldman McQuaid? I'm great, guys. I'm so flattered that you would have me on the show. And as always, I'm a little terrified I'll say something that will end it all. But, you know, let's see where we go.
Yeah, no, we're going to do our best to get you canceled. Don't you worry about it. We're so going to try. We're going to ask you all the mean, hard questions. But let's ask you all the easy shit first. You guys have resumed production on the series now that the strikes are over. What has production been like in the wake of the strikes? Have you guys had to, like, cram 26 episodes of writing into, like, 3 weeks?
Well, the strike was challenging, but The Simpsons... like it always seems to do, persevered through it in that we were very fortunate in that we didn't really have any new episodes that aired even at all during the strike. So obviously once the strike started, we couldn't do anything, but Fox was not going to not air the shows, but it mainly happened over the summer. I guess maybe in May, a show aired at the beginning of the strike, but those had already been locked and loaded.
Or they were in the can, right?
They were in the can, exactly. So, you know, the other writers, the writers that, you know, are in the tumultuous nightmare of peak streaming, capricious 3-episode, no money television, they, you know, really had a lot of, you know, struggles during the strike. The Simpsons were able to just pick up where we left off and there was really no interruption of anything because we were able to just do all the rewriting afterwards because it's animation.
Oh, so it didn't cut into the production schedule for what would have been this fall season? Is that correct?
Well, I mean, there might be maybe a little more of a gap in the spring than we would have had otherwise, but we usually have a gap in the spring anyway because there's so many like Oscars and award shows and Super Bowls that they don't want to put us up against them. So It's not going to be like a devastating gap. It's maybe going to be like a 2 month gap instead of like a 6 week gap. But as soon as we came back, we just hit the ball. We hit the ground rolling.
We hit the ball behind the runner to advance a productive out.
The Simpsons is, it was a series of 2 yard tush pushes to move us forward. And, we certainly cut a lot of corners that we wouldn't ordinarily cut in order to make delivery dates, but we're going to make the delivery dates and we're not going to lose any episodes. So, everyone suffered more than us. That's my takeaway.
What corners did you have to cut? Like, are the episodes going to be colored in? Did you have to do all the voiceover work? Like what concessions did you have to make?
We basically skipped a lot of the like 6 weeks of animation meetings that went between recording a script and rewriting the black and white version of the animation. So the stuff that we usually lovingly go over, we just skipped all the lovingly go overs and just said, okay, we did the animatic rewrite 1 week later instead of 12 weeks later.
That old period where you had it, was that a good time where you could put in sight gags that you might not have been able to think of otherwise without a visual to work off of?
No, we can still do that. We have the most amazing line producer, and he hates it when I mention his name, so I'm going to mention his name. His name is Richard Chung, and he is the dream producer. He's the guy who will be like, if you believe in it, I will make it happen. But he's also the guy who will say, do you really want to make this happen? And I like trust his judgment. Like, I'm like, is this a flight of fancy that no one will care about? Or is this really cool, fun thing that adds specialness to a show? Like an example of that is we did a canon loving fan and raging episode that was largely a flashback in the early 90s where enraged fans accidentally, Homer is a young teenager in the early 90s in this particular episode because of the flexible nature of our timeline that people really should accept. If they don't accept, I don't know why they like the show. But people were so mad that Homer was a teenager in the 90s when he should have been, I guess, a father to Bart, who was 10 and have graduated from high school in 1974.
Listening to Queen,
that after the show aired for this 90s flashback portion of the show, I said to Richard Chung, hey, what if we went back and put in a kid wearing a classic 90s Bart Simpson Don't Have a Cowman t-shirt in that reality of where Homer is a teenager, like a super mega contradiction, just to deliberately point out the beautiful contradiction that is our show. And Richard was like, yes, let's do that, which is a very indulgent thing to do. But to me, it's the kind of special little gem that makes the job fun.
No, I like that. I like that. What has he denied you? Have you ever been like, oh, well, I need Homer to actually put Smithers through a wood chipper and Smithers dies for good.
Smithers dies. I've blocked those out. I've compartmentalized the failures, the fails. You know, one of the reasons I've been so successful at this 27 or 28 year career I've had is I'm really good at forgetting the things that didn't go my way. And I just literally just erase them from my brain. Actually, I've forgotten most of the things that did go my way too. I've forgotten everything. Which is also helpful.
I was going to say, that's like self-care is what you're describing there. I feel like there's a lot of your worst showbiz careers are people that never forget anything that didn't go their way. And then their whole personality is that. So if you could pick the other way to go, that's obviously the way to be.
Yeah. I mean, it's like light, Alzheimer's light. the free version of Alzheimer's.
You right, download. You keep getting pinged to like, are you sure you don't want to upgrade?
Not
completely
paid,
forgetting everything.
Not the paid version. Just the kind of forget all this bad stuff. And you know, but what you guys were saying in the notes you sent me, I'm sorry to jump ahead, guys, but you guys can ask me all the
you
questions.
Got a lot of fucking nerve, brother.
But get his ass.
But like, you know, how do you think of new episodes? How do you keep the show fresh? How do you not be paralyzed by the excellence of the past? It's like Alzheimer's light, baby.
Just wipe it and move on.
I was gonna say, because like, you kind of don't have to remember your fuck-ups doing the show, because it's The Simpsons. Your fans are going to inform you of whatever slights you may have committed, whether or not they're slights at all. Yeah,
so yeah, I mean, our fans are like super smart. They super care. It brings them great pleasure to, you know, analyze the show and according to their literary style of judgment, which may be different than mine. But if it brings them pleasure, then I'm thrilled.
Okay, but they can be kind of annoying too sometimes, right? Excuse me, but they're not actually from Northern Kentucky. Thank you very much.
Right. I guess, you know, I mean, isn't apathy is the worst response, or just not watching the show anymore, which, trust me, plenty of people have that option as well. But, you know, like if they're enraged by what they perceive to be the pace of an episode or, you know, the characterization they think is off, you know, thank you for caring. I love you. I give you love for caring.
Have they ever cared a little too much, like at you? Like, oh, I really love you. I love you, man. I love the show. Like, I'm going to just follow you home.
Not yet.
Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
You know, there's some, you know, it's always a little tricky these days, not wanting to be murdered. And
so true.
But I, you know, I'm just going to move forward with the spirit of hope that Homer was in one episode, a teenager in 1992, is not a death worthy offense.
Yeah, I was gonna say, once you've gotten like a few decades of being a TV show under your belt, you'd hope that like obviously some of those little rounding errors would be forgiven. One thing you mentioned about fans of the show, and like obviously I don't know if it's obvious, but Drew and I are fans of the show.
You're millennial fans.
We are. Like, that's the thing, is that, like, I imagine that you're encountering, like, a lot of different tasting notes on the palate in terms of Simpsons freaks. Like, my nephew and niece, who are, like, 11 and 9, are also Gonzo Simpsons fans now. This is, like, there's going to be different.
That's the best.
It's cool for me because, like, I can, like, it's sort of hard to know what to talk to a 9-year-old about. And it's, like, I can still give you 15 minutes on, like, Groundskeeper Willie, like, origins and personality, you know? So it's, like, being able to bond over that is positive. The bit that I wanted to ask about, though, a show that's been on as long as The Simpsons has, people that were fans of that show growing up are certainly writing for it now. Like, mm-hmm. How, I guess, because you talked a little bit about, like, just sort of going for it, trying to be funny, whatever, and, like, not worrying too much about who you're going to piss off or, you know, what sort of lore-related toes are getting stepped on. But how do you keep from getting sort of tangled up in that sort of self-referentiality or like just in the previous, you know, whatever, 30 odd years of being a television show? How do you keep that from being like oppressively felt in a writer's room?
You know, one of the great joys of this show, the reason I still get excited about coming to work every day, which I really am most days, honestly, very lucky to have that feeling, is the challenge I think I'm good at is finding fresh areas, emotional areas and satirical and plot and everything and silliness areas that we haven't done. And I don't really, to go back and look at that giant red book of all the episodes, which isn't even all the episodes, it's half the episodes at this point, like they're never going to make a book for the rest. Where's my book? So I don't know if that really answers your question, but that the giant red book of Simpsons episodes, which is only half the episodes, is creative paralysis, that book. And you just cannot think at all. If you even skim the pages, it is like crazy glue that stops your brain from working. Yet, you know, I take just great, like I thought of something yesterday based on a real life thing that I did. Like I already in my mind know the table read is going great. That sounds very cocky. But in my mind, the way we will extrapolate this real life family kerfuffle into a exciting high emotional stakes Simpsons episode is clear in my head. And I know
what is it? Can you tell us?
I don't want to ruin it, but I'll just say
come on, I won't air for like a fucking year. You can tell
the emotional stakes is Marge's self-image in the town that everyone thinks she's a good person. I don't think that has ever been on. And then the way that those stakes are challenged is through a kind of kidnapping and extortion story. So Homer and Marge have to respond to a kidnapping and extortion situation, which is always great dramatic fun. And we've never done those dynamics of like, do we pay them? Do we not pay them? Where's the drop off? What's the threat? What's the escalation? Like all the great stuff from a kidnapping story with between a married couple where the stakes isn't like their kid's face, but something emotionally strong, but you know, not life or death is, I was feeling very confident about it.
And even if there was a season 22 episode based on Mel Gibson's Ransom, you don't care about it. Leave it be.
I might watch Mel Gibson's Ransom for like a...
Give me back my son!
Yeah, he hits some of the hardest give me back my sons in cinema history in that.
What I'm getting from Matt here is that his wife kidnapped and extorted somebody and he is using that for the episode. And I think that's a good idea. You got to use
Grist
every...
for the mill.
Yeah, you got to use every part of the animal when you're a writer on this show.
One of my kids is currently kidnapped and we're dealing with it.
So nice that you would take the time to...
How can I make this fun for the people?
What would be good is that you will spend, because it's The Simpsons, I have to think that the writer's room, like just getting the ransom note gag correct.
Right.
Like that's a good fun day in the writer's room. Just to think of good ransom.
Every day is fun in the writer's room. Every day is fun. We're so lucky. Even the days where we get nothing done, those are the most fun days.
Nothing gets done in a Hollywood writer's room? I've never heard of that ever.
Never. But like we haven't decided yet who the kidnappers are. It's so raw, this story. But someone pitched that if it was Jimbo and Shauna, you know, Shauna is kind of Jimbo's teen peer. I think teenage extortioners could be good.
Well, because they'd be so competent, you know.
Right. Well, it's that level of excellence that can only be found. But there's something so when we were talking to writers during the strike, we had a few WGA people on. They talked about what like a high functioning writer's room is like. And they also mentioned that it actually is like a fun place to be. And that was... I mean, I think I'd always imagined that. This shit is all magic to me. I've never been anywhere near the business, really. But that the idea of like what the sort of the new ideal that the streamers are trying to do, where it's like instead of a writer's room, it's like a Zoom call that everybody has to be on for 5 hours a day. Like, what? I see you shaking your head. Like, what is lost necessarily? Like, what makes a good writer's room work, I guess, is my like, what does it feel like and how does it differ from a bad one?
Well, every producer, writer has their own criterias, right? I personally hate Zoom. When after COVID ended, sort of ended, and we went back in person, I felt smart again. And I didn't realize how stupid I felt being so distracted. Even when I'm trying not to be distracted, you just, a Zoom call, like you guys aren't even paying attention to me now. Your wives are texting you. You're reading scary tweets, you know, you're looking
at your... Yeah, I have my browser open. I'm actually not.
You're checking your crypto, like whatever. Like
I'm looking at you, but I'm also trying to see what snacks you have on the shelf behind you in your office.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm watching just some fabulous porn. It's fantastic. Right. Just the best.
It's not fun trying to manage creative people who are watching porn. So
speak for yourself, sir.
So like... I just love working in person. That's why I love this job. That's like the funnest part. I mean, part of it is like making people pay attention to me. I guess that's part of the job too.
Right. Cause like, you're the showrunner. You can be like, hey, eyes on me, motherfucker.
You're not really allowed to have your phone in the room. I mean, obviously there's exceptions if like something's going on in their life. They can always leave the room to go, they want to disappear to play a freemium video game for 2 hours. I probably am not going to say anything.
Yeah, if you have to kidnap or extort somebody, you got to leave the room.
Exactly. Exactly. So like, or if they're dealing with that situation. So like I have a friend who's working on a show right now that is still Zoom only because the network doesn't want to pay to rent a writer's room and for snacks.
Oh, no snacks. That's no LaCroix. That's bullshit.
No LaCroix. Like it is so short-sighted. They're making like that is like penny wise pound foolish. The amount of value you're getting out of a staff who can feed off each other's energy is so high, assuming it's a functional room, of which there are many dysfunctional rooms, but assuming it's at all functional, that is like cheapness that will hurt the product in a unbelievably noticeable way.
I'd have to think that that matters even more for comedy than it would for drama, right?
100%.
You're in a writer's room, you're trying to make each other laugh because whatever makes you guys laugh is going to be what makes America laugh. So,
do you guys have a office?
We do, but it's very seldom are you there with like, I've been in, you know, every now and then, but I think I could count on one hand the number of times that I've been in there at the same time as someone else for the last few months. And this is something that I think is, in general, I've talked to some of our other coworkers about this, guys that remember working in like proper newsrooms where everybody's like talking and giving each other shit. Even when we did have an office and we were all together back at the old website, nobody talked. Like, it was all happening in Slack. So like, if someone got a good joke off, the room would be totally silent and then everybody would laugh and then everybody would get quiet again. Like, it did have kind of a weird dystopian science fiction energy to it that was not what I associated with a workplace. But
that's too bad.
It does seem like it. And I feel like, especially with, if you're trying to write funny stuff, like other people laughing is how you know that it's working. Like, that's like a real primate part of your brain there. But it's like, you know, the most basic test to pass in that. And, you know, if you're not doing it, then you wouldn't necessarily know. If you're just like getting one off in Slack and someone hits you with an LOL, that's not really the same thing as saying that they laughed at your joke.
We don't have Slack here. I don't know if we do. Oh, actually, you know what? What if there was a secret Slack where everyone was saying what a garbage I was? I would love that. That would make me so happy if there was like a hate Slack about me.
I do wonder if Defector has that. Like, there's a private channel where it's like no Drews and it's
no
like,
Drews God, allowed. Drew, everybody just makes fun of the Vikings in there all the time.
Yeah,
it's not true.
Ah, Drew just pissed and moaned about everyone being depressing again. Ah, what a shitty asshole.
What we're basically all discussing here is the fact that computers make you insane. That this is just like, there's new ways to get paranoid and unhappy about this.
Speak for yourself.
Like, I mean, I wish I was with you guys in Washington, D.C. and the Northeast Corridor right now. That would be so much fun. And like, I'm a student of collaboration, right? That's my main job, is collaboration. It's super fun. Like, when I went to school with the same school as Dan McQuaid, I believe, the University of Pennsylvania.
There's the connection. All right, there we go.
That was like, I was like the editor of the kind of bad, you know, weekly entertainment magazine there. Although it wasn't bad, it just wasn't good. But
the Penn Lampoon?
It wasn't a comedy magazine. It was like more like Entertainment Weekly. We loved pop culture anyway, but like, that was fun and like, that was collaboration and that was a super formative experience. And like, I just believe every two people in this sounds so corny, guys, I'm sorry,
but you know,
people have like a unique energy between them, and if you surround yourself with people for whom that energy is like silly, you do better work and you think of better ideas than by yourself. Like, there's this guy, John Frink, on our show, who's a hilarious writer and really great writer. But like, you just look at this guy's face and you want to say funny stuff. You just want to say funny stuff to Frink's goofy face.
Oh, like, even Maven.
John Frink, the Hoyven Maven was named after him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's incredible. The professor himself. What an amazing honor to learn that's like, how there was like a Lutz on 30 Rock, where I was just kind of like, oh, all right. Like,
can I ask you, Matt, do you guys have a nice writer's room? Because I did work in a writer's room in Hollywood for a week. I worked on the sports show with Norm Macdonald, and it was on the Warner lot. But it was like, it was very much a temp office. Like, it felt like a middle school, like trailer classroom that you were navigating to get to the writer's room. So it wasn't like I was expecting like, you know, maybe there'd be some tasteful leather-bound books and, you know, a refrigerator filled with Dom Perignon and, you know, things of that nature. That was not it. I was essentially at a construction site that was a writer's room. The Simpsons get a little bit more proper accommodation since it is a multi-billion-dollar concern.
We've just been in the same offices for like 100 years, and they're just these kind of nice outdoor-indoor bungalows.
Ooh!
On an old lot, but nothing like fancy, nothing like what like a Ryan Murphy or a J.J. Abrams or any of these modern super producers would have, with like a fridge with a transparent door and all the sodas have to be lined up perfectly because he has a transparent door. in the fridge. Although I did say to the PA the other day, pretend our fridge had a transparent door. That's how the sodas should be arranged, even though we know it's not a transparent door.
Our PAs are great. On the fridge door, you could draw how it should be arranged and you could diagram it and say, this is how it ought to be.
So I think it's kind of shabby chic or like old school Hollywood relaxed vibe, but not if we were one of the new super producers of like a Greg Berlanti or a, I don't know, Chuck Lorre. I'm sure Chuck Lorre has very fancy offices with every modern convenience.
He just gets a floating like city above the lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Ryan Murphy's offices are the Vegas sphere. There's just constantly some sort of AI projection going on in there.
Do you get your own little, since you're the EP, do you get your own little bungalow on the lot apart from the writer's room and you can like, that you can drop into and like have a taco like privately? And
well, I just have you can kind of see the office scenario here going on the Zoom, right? Yeah.
So I'm sorry, that is your Simpsons office. That's not your home. Is that correct?
This is my Simpsons office.
Well, you know what? I have to, for the people that can't see, which is everyone, I do have to give respect to the elliptical bike in the background with the fan, which is like such strong 1988 aerobic equipment. I could do cardio and get a light breeze all at the same time. It's a lovely piece of equipment. And
that's from the set of 1984's Jamie Lee Curtis, John Travolta, Perfect.
And you have not only one shitty college couch, but two. And that is cool as shit.
But you're 100% right about the purpose of that exercise bike. I literally only have it there so that if someone comes in for a meeting, I just get on it like a yuppie in like Working Girl. So I can be like, hold on one second. It's like you always see those great scenes of a guy in a suit in his office on his weird 1980s elliptical. And that's how you knew he was a fucking jackass. That was all the characterization you need was bike in office. So that's why it's there.
But we used to have shorthand in this country. Now look at us.
I bought an elliptical during the pandemic and I put it in the basement. And now, like, I work out on it still, but my son, the 11-year-old, like, I've gone down and, like, he's on it and he's sort of slowly pedaling while watching shit on his iPad while playing the Switch. And I'm like, motherfucker, like, you have to, like, that is for exercising, young man. And he's like, oh, I am exercising. I'm like, no, it doesn't count. It's bullshit. But I got used to that a long time ago.
In my day, we exercised by watching one screen.
Yeah.
Seriously.
That's just goddamn one. Right. And we would listen to our Discman like while running. Like it was, mm-hmm. and I had the sport headphones that were yellow so that everyone knew I was working out hardcore. It was great. We need to take a quick break.
These are sports.
So Roth's going to have water. We'll take a quick commercial break. Before we cut to break, I just want to note though, don't miss the show. Critics are calling Inessential. Matthew Lillard and Angie Harmon star in the all new DEA Toronto, airing Fridays only on CMT and streaming on the Kid Rock Plus app. We'll be right back with Matt Selman.
Matthew Lillard.
Hey, it's Drew, and this week we're sponsored by Wild Grain, the first ever Bake From Frozen subscription box for sourdough breads, fresh pastas, and artisanal pastries. Every Wild Grain item bakes from frozen in 25 minutes or less, no thawing required. I got a Wild Grain box a few weeks ago and had their pasta in it and their bread. Both of them were delicious, and I would order it again. And now you can fully customize your Wild Grain box so you can get any combination of breads, pastas, and pastries you like. If you want a box of all bread, all pasta, or all pastries, you can have it. Plus, for a limited time, you can get $30 off your first box, plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/distraction and start your subscription. You heard me. Free croissants in every box. And $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/distraction. One more time. That's wildgrain.com/distraction or use the promo code distraction at checkout.
The Distraction is sponsored by BetterHelp. Whether or not you or your family give gifts during the holidays, you get to define how you give to yourself. The holidays are an especially great time to do that. So whether it's by starting therapy or going easier on yourself during the tough moments or treating yourself to a day of complete rest, remember to give yourself some love this holiday season. Therapy can be a bright spot amid all of the stress and change, something to look forward to, help you feel grounded, to give you the tools to manage everything going on. It's an important tool to consider if you're looking to learn positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself, even if you're someone who hasn't experienced major trauma. If you want to try therapy and you're not sure where to start, BetterHelp is a great tool to keep in mind. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient and flexible and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. In the season of giving, give yourself what you need with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/distraction today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/distraction.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
And we're back with Simpsons executive producer and co-showrunner, Matt Selman. And Matt, wow. I wish you, I don't know if you have a sister named Patty, but wouldn't that be so appropriate?
Well, Matt, I mean, Maddie Selman is sort of like Patty Selma. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's almost good enough. We can accept that. We can talk sports with you because you know about sports, Matt Selman. And we have to talk about the story du jour of the week, which is the college football playoff. Undefeated ACC champion Florida State got excluded from the college football playoff this weekend in favor of Alabama, which has a loss, and Texas, which also has a loss. I'll ask this first, actually, of Roth. Where does Florida State's snub fall on the spectrum of unjust to hilarious, Roth?
I mean, I think that we have to be open as adults to the possibility that it's both extremely unjust and extremely hilarious. I think that this is one of those ones where, like, the selection committee was pretty open about the fact that Florida State deserved to make it but isn't going because their quarterback has a leg injury.
Yes, Jordan Travis snapped his leg in half a few weeks ago, and that was bad.
I was trying to be nice about it, but yeah, his leg is real fucked up. He can't, obviously he's not going to be able to play.
He might have died. Who knows? Who's to say?
But look, that's not what we're talking about here. We're on to the football championship. The thing that's funny about it to me, I guess, is that it's happening to Florida State. With all love to Israel Daramola, we love Israel, but he's not representative of that fan base to me. This is the thing, as somebody who's more or less outside of college football to me, is that there's no bad thing that could happen to any of these programs that I wouldn't be amused by. So, I mean, I feel like it sucks for them. I feel bad. And obviously, you never want to see Bama catch a break either, just on principle. And yet, like, the fact that it's unjust does not make it, any less amusing in that sort of, like, if you understand it at a sort of an entertainment narrative level, as opposed to who will reign supreme as the best football program in the country. And so,
I mean, guys, I went to the Georgia TCU championship game at SoFi in January.
Wasn't that a treat for you?
And
nail biter.
It and I went with a bunch of drunker than you can imagine Georgia frat relatives of mine.
I can imagine pretty drunk Georgia frat people, I should say. But I believe you're
and I guess it was a fun game because my wife and I spent literally the second half just walking around SoFi in circles, eating all their different foods, doing like a kind of everybody feed Phil of SoFi Center, because it was the most boring one-sided thing you ever saw.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what they're afraid of, right? That, that Michigan will do that to Florida State.
1,000%.
So, like, it's a completely I think they
and
would.
Having been to that, like, I love football. Having been to a game that was so much a blowout, I would just eat three different types of Asian themed nachos rather than watch it. it's a valid fear for them.
Yeah. You don't want to put fans in the mindset where they want to do like a churro flight instead of watching the game that you put on the field.
Well, let me ask you about that churro flight, Matt Selman. Did you like the stadium? I've never been to that stadium. Did you slip on the concrete floor? Did you have good Asian-themed nachos? Were drinks $28 a piece?
Is that the one with the long hamburger? That's the one with the long burger, right?
You know, there's so many different levels. Like, SoFi is like, Going to SoFi is like going to the airport. There's like 100 different securities, 20 wristbands, 50 escalators, you know, park, you have to park a million miles away. I mean, we're fortunate in that there's some, the Simpsons has these like football, good football seats for us to go see Rams and Chargers games. Those are really good seats, and you can, it's a really good vantage point to see the, those two. Well, the Chargers aren't good and the Rams are well coached, but probably not that great either. Hot takes.
Yeah.
But the food is really good. I'm a little, I love stadium food. I love it. But sometimes I always just go back to the hot dog bar.
Yeah. I was going to say, so stadium food is like a different thing now than it was when I was young. Like, are you like loyal to the like chicken fingers and fries school of things? Or if you're at a place where they have like, you know, professional grade tacos, will you opt for that? Or you're a hot dog boy at heart?
I like to try everything, but then usually the gravity of hot dogs with like one of those, and I'll put the nacho cheese from the nacho bar on the hot dogs.
Yeah.
Just pull me back. But I will say, so the SoFi food is really good on that one level.
Well, also you can rely on the hot dog. It's like when you go to the hotel restaurant and the menu's got fish tacos on it, but you're like, ooh, that sounds good. But wait a second, I'm in Cleveland. Can they really pull that off?
Right. Yeah, like, do you know how to talk? How, like, you can make
and then
that?
Then you get it and you're like, yeah, I really, really should have gotten a fucking cheeseburger. That really would have been the right move.
So, Drew, before we move on entirely, I want, because you've actually, like, it seems like had a college football renaissance in your life this year. Like, you seem to be way more dialed in on it than I remember you being in the past. Do you care about what happened to Florida State?
Are you asking about me?
Because you're the guy that cares the most. I'm asking you, man. Does it bug you?
So, teenage me, back when, like I used to follow the lead of all the sports writers. Like, I fucking hated the BCS. I hated the bowl system. I wanted the playoff. And now, like after this happened, like, Bomani Jones went on a rant against the playoff. Like, he was like, oh, the playoff is so stupid, so hard. There's no good way to crown a college football champion. And I was like, Bo, that's wrong. Like, and I'm fine with it. But so back then, I would have been like, this is an injustice. Like, Florida State, a scrappy underdog Florida State, like, deserved, you know, a place. You know, like, I would have been very, very pissed. Now it's like, I just want a good TV show. And so my interests align with the committee. But I do want to ask Matt Selman about it, because, Matt, one of the things about this playoff is that they always want to present how hard of a decision it was for the committee, where they're like, oh, they agonized over keeping out Florida State. And so ESPN just yesterday, they published a report. And I want to read the first couple paragraphs to you, Matt. Tell me if this sounds genuine to you. This is from Heather Dinich of ESPN. And she wrote, it was between 1:30 and 2 a.m. Central Time on Sunday, after the conference championship games, when the 13 members of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee finally left their meeting room. They had been sequestered for hours as they determined the top four teams in the country. They knew what they could potentially wind up with, and it didn't feel good. Matt, do you believe that narrative as it's written?
Look, guys, I'm the least qualified person to talk about NFL or college football in the entire country. But here's my hot take. Football used to be run by, professionally, they were run by a collection of evil owners. And then the college was run by a collection of greedy NCAA executives. Now, and the thing that no one, this is a little bit more bigger picture than what
Go
you
for
asked,
it.
But this is my hot take. Everyone works for the bookies. The bookies are
big FanDuel.
Yes. The bookies are 100% the top of the food chain. And even though, and I love football, 30% of the plays could go either way. So the number one, I believe it is a $1 trillion sport when you take the entire ecosystem into account. It is a $1 trillion sport, and it goes bookies, owners, evil NCAA executives, then conference executives, then GMs, then coaches, then players, then you guys, then the bottom feeders like you guys, and all the different thousands of...
I'm sorry, what?
I'm sorry, the top...
No, it's all right.
Now, do you mean unlicensed bookies like a dude named Spider in New Jersey?
No, I mean, or, like...
So like our sponsor, Bareback Sportsbook, would like a legit... The yes. licensed joints. Okay.
Yes.
It's in the back.
But also that the fact that the spread is now part of the discussion, everything is to drive gambling. Everything is to drive betting. Everything in the entire sport is to drive betting, 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 betting. It's used to be like this fun 30% of the game. Now it's this kind of gross 80% of the game, in my opinion.
I feel like there's something to that tonally, just in the sense of like, it used to be when like Al Michaels would make like a cheeky reference to the spread during a broadcast, he'd be like, oh, Al, you're so bad. And I liked it. I don't gamble. I don't give a shit. But it was like the sort of thing where I was like, oh, you know, he's acknowledging that that exists. But somehow when it goes from like subtext and jumps into the actual text itself, which if you watch, it doesn't happen as much during NFL games, but I watched the, and this is a real pervert confession here. I watched the XFL championship during like a real slow moment during the summer. And that's like what they talked about during the game.
Sure.
Like it was like the team's like driving at the end and they're like, all right, and it's an 8.5 point spread too. So this could really go either way. And you're like, but like it was on the screen. It was like visually under the score, like the over and under and the spread.
I mean, do you, if you guys want to be depressed?
Do we ever watch?
Buddy,
watch. I always think I'm gonna like this. Scott Van Pelt's Bad Beats on ESPN. So I'm like, oh man, Bad Beats. That's gonna be so funny. All these come from behind things, and then you realize people are betting on college football teams you've never heard of with 35 point spreads with like low res VHS quality film that you're watching, and like, oh my god, people are betting on everything. Okay.
Yeah, just sweating it out to some SoCon game on your laptop.
It's not like a bad beat if like the Clippers come back and beat the Nuggets or something. It's a bad beat of like fake imaginary religious college versus, you know, other yep. other barely real religious college, you know, football teams, you know, exploitation generating yep. nightmare. And like, oh my god.
Sad.
Like, I mean, viewership is driven by gambling. Viewers, I'm not anti-gambling. I'm just saying that the food chain has been rearranged.
I think that that's part of what makes the story that Drew was quoting so funny to me. Is
yes,
that
exactly.
As I think
it's all
it's
about
gotten,
gambling,
right? So as it gets more cynical and more in the text, you have to like pump up the volume on the other stuff so that it's like 13 guys in a room. None of them could eat. They hadn't slept in days. Like, who will be the four teams to compete, you know, like in the Tostitos Fiesta yeah. Bowl this year or whatever. Like that, all of that, it's like, so you can feel that the sort of like the pomp and circumstance goes up commensurate with the actual sort of like decline of the all.
Yeah,
the
it's like
it.
It's like the only day of the year that they're going to work. Like Condoleezza Rice didn't even touch her pizza. She was so dialed in. Yep.
I love that also that when they finally put a representative from that committee on TV, it was like just exactly the sort of guy that you'd think. Like, it's, you know, you read like 13 people in a room doing their level best. Like, your brain sort of checks down to like, you know, John F. Kennedy's brain trust during the Bay of Pigs. And then you finally see them and it's just some like perfectly pink golf guy named Boo being like, well, you know, this is the sort of thing we take very seriously. And that's why none of us have actually other jobs. This is all we do is think about it. Just like, all right, Boo.
I mean, look, this is not a hot take or insight of any kind, just that the SEC runs the whole
show.
Well,
that was one of the things, like yeah. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, who is, of course, is on the committee. Like they were, I never thought for a second that Alabama would get excluded from the playoffs. It just wasn't going to happen. And they're,
I mean, if Georgia had won,
I'm
the least qualified person to have an opinion about this.
Yeah,
but so if Georgia had won, by the way, I talked to my nephew, who's a huge Bulldog super fan. And he said he was in a sports bar when they were announcing the Final Four, and they messed with everyone by announcing like 1, 2, 3, 6. So they heard everyone heard Georgia fourth. They heard
it just like spoken aloud
fourth, because they wanted to do it in like the Bachelor style maximum dramatic reveal, right? So it was like 1, 2, 3, Georgia, and they all cheered, and then no way, Georgia was sixth. Boo.
This is why, as a Rutgers basketball fan, I would appreciate it if they did the second four out before they do on Selection Sunday. Just, I want to hear, you know.
But like, you have to respect the money printing abilities of the NCAA, that someone like me, who really wasn't interested in college football at all, watched two college football games this weekend. Like, they got me.
Oh, yeah.
I watched
yeah.
Michigan, and I watched Alabama, Georgia, and they were like, it's a professional sports league with national teams, with huge fan bases. They are geniuses. This four-game playoff is a billion-dollar enterprise, and when it goes to 12, it's going to be hundreds of billions, and it's good for them.
But I did want to note that so Sankey, and you know, when they brought up the idea of excluding Alabama after they had won the SEC title game, he said, "Well, that simply wasn't going to be an option. Like they were not. There was no way they were going to leave an SEC team out because the SEC and the Big Ten essentially run the sport and will continue to, particularly next year when both of those conferences expand, because the SEC will now have Texas, who, by the way, made the playoff, and the Big Ten will have Washington, who, by the way, made the playoff. So it's an entirely Big Ten SEC playoff, you know, if you're going by the future, which why not? So it's unsurprising in that regard. Matt, before we open up the fun bag, we do have to talk about your favorite professional teams.
I just have to apologize to all sports fans for I know nothing.
Yeah, but you got all fired up. That was great. That was good radio. Don't.
Yeah, you know enough about how this shit works to know that if you don't know what you're talking about, just get excited.
You know who I like, guys? I like Nick Wright. Do you guys like him?
Yeah, he's a friend of Defector.
I think he's funny, and I think his energy is great.
He's grown that hair long, though. Cut your hair, young man. You can't go out like that. Matt, let's talk about your favorite professional teams, the Boston Celtics and the New England Patriots. Now, the Celtics are currently the top seed in the East right now, so I actually don't really want to talk about them. Let's talk about the Patriots instead, because they're fucking terrible.
Because, well, we all know that Jason Tatum is not going to collapse in the playoffs. We know that for sure.
He's going to be fine.
We all know that, like, having a great regular season record is going to guarantee alpha dog Tatum, who's going to be so locked in and completely rise to the level of championship.
That's right. Jaylen Brown won't forget how to pass during the playoffs. It'll be great. It'll be fantastic. I'm really excited for that.
Like, I don't even want the Celtics to do well in the regular season. I think that hurts them in the postseason. And least hot take of the world, basketball
is... I'm glad you added the regular season caveat there. At first, I was like, this guy's getting too hot. You're like, I don't even want him to do well.
Parody of hot takes that I'm just repeating.
All right.
The playoffs are the only season of basketball.
Yeah.
There. Okay.
Sure. Chip.
Brand new take.
Excuse me,
sir. New guys.
So we can steer clear of playoff discourse entirely by talking about the Patriots.
This is in-season tournament erasure as well, and I won't stand for it. I was looking forward to see, because the tournament finals are this week, and I'm excited to watch it for 5 minutes until the court design gives me a migraine headache and I can't watch it anymore and I have to turn it off. So that, I find that very exciting. So let's talk about the Patriots, because they're really, really, really fucking bad. In fact, and this is the fun stat of the weekend that everyone threw around. For the third straight week, the Patriots held an opponent under 10 points and they lost all three of those games. And that had not been done since like the 1910 Fort Wayne Pilots or whoever the fuck.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was a team that played in like a declining industrial.
Yeah, it's a team that some franchise that no longer exists. And in fact, was like a rugby franchise or something like that. So
the Kalamazoo Whistle Poppers.
I was going to say, yeah. It's
like, just pitching.
The Youngstown Bigots. Yeah.
We're at work now. We're at work and I'm pitching on funny old time shit. Well, it's sad because I certainly loved the Patriots super run, right? Here's my question for you guys. I'm going to throw it back to you. If they said to Belichick, hey, man, you're great at coaching, but you're not so hot at GM. So we're going to bring in another GM to put the team together, and you're just going to work with that like a regular coach. Would he accept that? Because clearly that's part of the problem.
He's a terrible GM. Has been for like a decade now.
Right. So would he accept that demotion or
Roth, you want to answer that?
I feel like he wouldn't. I think it's the right move, but I feel like at this point, you know, as with a lot of your a lot of institutions in the culture that suddenly have revealed themselves to be just made entirely of termites, I don't know how you would begin to roll back the responsibilities that Belichick has in that organization towards something more reasonable or even just along the scale of another very powerful coach. Like, I mean, all of his assistants, with the exception of Gerard Mayo, who I guess is there basically as his successor, or, you know, is being sort of groomed as that by Belichick, all of the rest of them are guys that he has around because they're no threat to him, because they're like sycophants. And then organizationally, I don't know, like, who was even their last actual GM? Was it Pioli?
Might have been. Oh, he had some fixer guy named like Ernie or something like that, who was like,
yeah, it was like a long enough time ago, though, that it's like, I feel like Belichick did get to, you know, he won a Super Bowl or a few Super Bowls with his teams of like Navy guys and high school lacrosse superstars and, you know, just like the randos that
he's
into. I think
any GM under any GM that was with him was a GM in name only. I think ever since he has been in New England, he has run the entire operation. Right.
So it's a deal breaker.
Yeah. I feel like it would be, and I feel like it's also going to be weird. It's not him. He's not going to like go out one way or the other. I feel like he is a lock for a reputation tarnishing last go round with some other team that brings him in thinking that he's the last piece.
Carolina.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it really could be like that. Feels David Tepper-y to me.
So
I don't
Tepper-y.
Know that he's got.
I would love to see Tepper and fucking Belichick go at it. Like those two guys deserve each other.
Well, the other thing is that, you know, his skills as a general manager are clearly lacking. But the thing this year is that he has done an awful coaching job. He did an awful coaching job last year, too. He's 71. And so, you know, I've been sitting here, and I'm not the only one to think this, whether or not he's desirable just as a coach at this point, because he destroyed that offense last year so badly by putting unqualified assistants in Matt Patricia and Joe Judge in charge of that offense. He got an actual offensive coordinator this year in Bill O'Brien. The offense has gotten worse. And now he's doing this shit where he's like, he's picking up a different quarterback like Malik Cunningham off the practice squad this week and then dropping them like 2 days later and not telling anybody who he's starting and like giving different guys reps, like just like a whole different, like it's almost as if he's deliberately tanking, but like he's not deliberately trying to do it. Like he thinks this is actually like he's still got it. And it's weird to watch, and I'd say sad, but it's Bill Belichick. I'm not going to be sad.
Yeah, well, I was going
to
say.
But also, here's my, like, Bill Simmons parody take of the week. I just can't wait to see Belichick get the number two pick and then, you know, trade down for four, you know, rugby kickers and log snappers. Like, that's the hot Simmons take, right? That he'll get the high pick and then break it down into 1,000 mini picks.
Yeah, it seems like all of the mistakes, again, with all the stuff that Drew was describing, as egregious as it is in terms of the quarterback, especially shit, is like, that's classic Belichick, not the quarterback stuff. And for the longest time, that was one thing he didn't have to worry about. But yanking stuff around, being really high-handed, refusing to like sort of say to anybody what it is he's actually doing. Like if you had to describe Belichick's whole thing, like that's it. And the problem, it seems, is that like as that has stopped working, he's just like mashing the same button even harder instead of like, and who knows, if I'm 71 years old, I might have a hard time changing anything about myself too. But it does seem to me like he's not capable of like updating the approach in any meaningful way.
It is,
even though it's like at this point bottomed out.
It is now as if he is one of his own assistants running a new team. Does that make sense? So it's got a McDaniels in Vegas feel to it. It's got Patricia in Detroit feel to it. And I don't think that's going away. We have to get to a fun bag question very quickly because we're running out of time.
I know. Man. No one wanted to hear my sports opinion.
No, that was the whole goddamn point of having you on.
But like, I mean, guys, you guys should. Okay, can I just say a little Simpsons thing? That
yes.
One of the episodes we made that I'm most proud of is called The Town, and it's a travel show where the Simpsons go to Boston. And I don't know if you millennial fans of the classic Simpsons have seen it, but it is the most Boston-tastic Patriots FU craziness you could ever imagine. Love letter to my childhood. And it has tons of anti-Brady, Belichick, Bell Biv DeVoe, every Boston thing you can imagine. Is
all
in
the
that
big
episode.
Icons.
Yes. All the big B Austin, B Boston.
The four Bs.
Baked beans.
Are Bell Biv and DeVoe from Boston? I know the
guys.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, they're from.
I don't know my Boston lore.
New Edition was like a Boston area supergroup.
No shit. Yep. I had no idea.
One of my real memories as a kid was they used to have, remember, like, they used to have like 1-800 numbers where you could like call and hear a recording of a famous person?
Yeah,
like,
I did a gag with Jessica Hahn 2 weeks ago about that. The Corey hotline.
There was one for Bobby Brown that I remember seeing in the mornings, like watching cartoons, and it was him, like the New Edition Bobby Brown when he was like America's heartthrob, and he says, "Don't break my heart" at the end of it. And that's how I knew that he was a Boston guy.
I can still hear that in my head.
Yeah.
Let's open up the fun bag real quick. These are real questions from defector readers and distraction listeners. We only have time for one. Matt Simon, this is from Drew, not me, a different Drew. If you could travel back 20 years in time with a Pro Football Reference draft database and get hired as an NFL general manager and forcibly draft the best players every year, would your team win at least 15 Super Bowls?
That's so many Super Bowls.
That's a lot of Super Bowls, but you would have 20 years of draft predictions in your back pocket. Could you do it?
No, definitely not. I don't, whenever I love football, I could watch football all day. I don't know where the ball is most of the time. I don't know what a formation is. I know what in the pocket is a little bit, but I know when they're like close to the center, and I know when they're far back from the center. I can't read a defense. I don't know what an 11 is. I don't know what all those words mean.
Can you identify the mic?
No.
That's my favorite thing.
That's the middle linebacker. The mic is the middle line.
I mean, when a penalty happens, I never know what the penalty was. It's the magic hypnosis of this sport that, like, dum-dums like me were incapable of watching 11 times 2, 22 people running around. I don't know what's happening. But then they show it in slow motion 6 times and it's cool. So I could not be anything good in the coach department.
I feel like that's 15 Super Bowls is the number that's an issue for me. I feel like if you went through and you got the best player at every spot in every draft and you knew who it was going to be with the power of hindsight, you would have a really good roster, obviously, but I don't know. There's so many variables because football is so stupid and so brutal and stuff like that, that it's like, if you're picking, I guess it's like you're going back with the benefit of that website and picking guys that didn't get hurt or did stay healthy or whatever, but you can't control the reality going forward.
And also so much of who is a successful football player is how, what a good fit they are with the system. Like I can repeat other people's takes till the cows come home.
No, but I think that's right.
I have no insight of my own, I assure you.
Right. If you drafted all of them, but you hired like fucking Rich Kotite as the coach.
Yeah, right.
That's the fun part of the question is you do all of that. Like you do all of it, but you're the Carolina Panthers. But like, does it matter?
What about here's what another Belichick thing, since we're kicking him while he's down, is the big deal at the beginning of this season was, is he going to stick around long enough to, was it to meet Don Shula's winning record?
Yeah, the all-time wins record.
So that's right. If he's going to win 2 a year, how many more years does he need?
he's in the teens behind Shula. And
right,
so,
no, he's like years behind it.
Right, so before the season, it was like, oh, he can catch him like in 2024. That's like gone. That's off the table.
2030.
We're starting to get in the area where it's like, oh, Tiger can't pass Jack Nicklaus anymore. Like that's where this is sort of...
What if we found out that Belichick was super addicted to daily fantasy? And that's why he wasn't able to give all his focus to the teams.
Well, who can argue them? You can win big money that way.
Oh, yeah, shiploads.
You can win Simpsons money with that shit. Matt Selman, you're an executive producer of The Simpsons, which airs on some network. I can't remember which one. I think
Country Music Television.
Well, yeah, guys, The Simpsons, I know you want to end this show, which I agree you should, that the... The success of The Simpsons is so directly connected to the NFL, speaking of sports, yes. That like, yeah. It's crazy. The Fox has 8 NFL doubleheaders every year. And this year The Simpsons did not receive the direct lead in for some of them because they're trying to launch this show, Krapopolis. Good luck. And, you know, I'm part of the fun part of my job is picking Simpsons episodes that I think are good thematic fits with an NFL lead-in. Like I think The Simpsons, maybe unlike other shows, is a great connection to the NFL. It's about a middle-class American middle family of middleness, and that's who loves football. Why not? So like there's a Simpsons, I'm going to plug it, that airs after the Cowboys-Dolphins game, which should be a good game, on Christmas Eve, right?
All
Christmas
right.
Eve. Brand New Simpsons airs at 8 o'clock after Cowboys Dolphins, which should be a good game, right? Guys, I assume they're like,
God, yeah, I hope teams. So.
I mean, it could be a blowout, I would say, for the Cowboys, but you could see it going a lot of ways. The inspiration for that episode was that video that was going around last year where some guys were cheating in a fishing competition, and they cut open the belly of the fish and all these weights.
Yeah, they were stuffing it with weights.
And there was a blue collar redneck riot handheld video riot. So that was the inspiration for this. And that episode is one of the joys of my job is thinking, oh my God, sports fans are going to love this episode. We did, like you were asking earlier, can you jam in recent references? Yes, we can, Harbaugh. And, you know, the theme of cheating in sports and what it means to cheat and is just super fun. And that's my big plug. That and the Simpsons episode, The Town, which aired 8 years ago or something. 2006.
Right. Well, those are both acceptable plugs. We're so happy to have you on.
Oh, it's a joy. I apologize to people who know about sports.
Eric Silver is our producer. Misha Stanton is our editor. Our theme song is by Kirk Hamilton. Ads and production services are by Multitude. And you can subscribe to Defector.com right now. Just go to Defector and hit that subscribe button. You can also email us at distraction@defector.com or even call us at 909-726-3720 and leave a message. That's 909-PANERA-0. Matt Selman, thank you so much for coming on. Will you come on again sometime, sir?
Oh, my God. I mean, I would be honored.
Thank you.
I never get a better workout than the next day when I'm listening to my own voice.
Riding that fan bike.
Yeah,
like snow tomorrow.
Yeah, on the fan bike. Yeah.
We'll see you next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.